Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Eric Clement. Eric, how's it going, man?
How's it going, Yas? Nice to see you. Thanks for the invite.
No, most definitely. I'm looking forward to this one. Just cross the pond and cross the water just to see what different insights you picked up along the way as well. But Eric, before we get into that, maybe a brief insight around who you are, what you're doing, we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously you can tell from the accent. So I was born in London, North London, to be exact. Came over here when I was around 25 years old, across the pond, as you said, to New York. Got kind of a working visa, really just experience the US, but also to get my feet a little bit wet just with coaching. You know, I didn't have a lot of experience, wasn't on the grass a lot, right? And an old mentor of mine, actually, that I know that you've had on the podcast before, Chris Ramsey, had mentioned, look, man, like if you want to get good at this, you need your time on the grass. Doesn't matter who it is. Do you know what I mean? Doesn't matter what level, you need to just be there. You need to like be with the kids. You need to learn how to do it, you know, find your own way. So came out for a summer and, you know, it was a great experience. And they actually offered to have me stay on. So it was only meant to be like a 6-week, you know, summer camps and things like that. So coaching kids from, you know, mini camp soccer, really young ages to, you know, much older ages as well. So really kind of get my hours in, but then they offered me, you know, to stay on, to extend my visa for another 3 months to work out in the autumn, right? So that's their seasons kind of work up in the Northeast. Spring season and a fall season, right? So basically to stay out till November. So I absolutely love that great opportunity where I was working more with teams. But the way this coaching company was structured was basically I was out on the grass from like, you know, 4 till 9 most days, Monday through Friday. You know, so it was like my first full-time coaching gig, you know? And you know, it's like now in the academies back home, unless you're a full-time coach, right, at Cat 1 Academy, you don't have a full-time job, right? And that was kind of my issue originally. So it was great. It was just a great experience. Ended up kind of staying out there for a little bit, bobbing around a little bit, ended up in Southeast Florida. So it was like near the Miami area, coaching at a couple of clubs. During that time, kind of, you know, fast-forwarded 6-7 years, I was kind of doing my licenses over here, my coaching licenses, building up contacts, worked out Southeast Miami and then ended up here just pre-pandemic in 2019. So I'm in Tampa, Florida now, and I work at a club called Tampa Bay United. My official role is Director of Coaching Education. So I kind of help run the coaching education initiatives, but also player education initiatives as well. So yeah, that's a lot. And feel free to jump in whenever you want.
Definitely. There's a few different directions. Well, mine's going straight away. I think in the first one I'm going to kind of start with is obviously, you know, just kind of picking up on the conversation we were just having off air as well around the differences between obviously the landscape of football in particular over there and what it is over here from your experiences. But just tell us obviously a little bit how it's structured and, you know, what the biggest challenges are within that.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, just comparing it, and it was a big it was a shock to the system a little bit when I first came out, right? Because I'd been used to, and I'd played in just the youth. I've never played in an academy in England. Do you know what I mean? I'd only played grassroots football growing up. So it was like, two training sessions a week. My parents could afford that. Do you know what I mean? I come from a humble background, but most of my football learning of football was done in an unstructured environment, right? Where I'll just go summer holidays, Friday nights during the summer, just to go to the park, man. There's a park behind my house, and we just go, we put jackets down, and we'd just be playing, right? And even like the coaches I had, you know what I mean? I probably knew more about football than them. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like just a parent coach. I was never really coached, I don't think. Do you know what I mean? I can't really remember people telling me, how to dribble, how to strike a ball. Obviously, they put the cones down and stuff, but there was much less involvement. Came over here, and it's almost an uber structured environment, right? Where you have parent coaches at, like, we have a rec level, which is probably your entry level, what you might call grassroots. And then we have what you call a travel team system. So the travel team system is now when you're getting a little bit more serious about the sport, you get into basically teams, right? Where depending on the level of that travel team, you maybe travel locally within 30-minute, 40-minute radius of your house to now the highest level of competitive soccer in the US. We have our MLS Next program, which is obviously it consists of MLS pro academies, but also other non-MLS academies as well. So pay-to-play clubs, and then everything else below that is basically pay-to-play, generally, right? Apart from your academy, here and there, right? So from that, that structure is obviously it's different to back home, but yeah. So it was definitely a shock to the system, and I got into this obviously because I was passionate about teaching and also the game. Do you know what I mean? So slowly had to kind of like make my way into a more, I guess you'd call it a cleaner environment almost, right? Because there's people who have money generally that can pay to play the sport. Do you know what I mean? There are scholarship programs that are available at a lot of the clubs, but do you know what I mean? At some of your more modest sports in the country, maybe American football, basketball, perhaps there's more of a possibility for people of all socioeconomic backgrounds to be able to pay and play.
Why do you think that is? And there's a couple of things that kind of really, creep into my mind as I'm asking that question. Is it just because there's a lack of environments? Obviously, one of the biggest things that we have in England is that we've got so many different environments that you can go and play, right? You talk there about, just being able to even go out on the street and play. Obviously, that's not as common as it was once was. How old are you, by the way?
36.
Okay, so it's a similar age to myself in that when we were younger, we could literally just go out and play on the streets, and that would just be seen, that would just be deemed, normal.
Absolutely.
It's less normal now, less common now, in the sense that if it's not a grass, if it's not like a power league or something like that, you're probably not doing it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Very rare, and especially now because the pricing of all these things and the costs that come with obviously booking things like power league and venues and such, that it just makes it even more challenging. But point being that we have got so many different environments here where we can do
It's an
that.
infrastructure,
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly. You can literally go down the road and it's probably round the corners seven teams at one venue, if you like.
Exactly.
Is it fewer and far between there? Is that why is it, I guess, a bit more of a challenge, and it is based on the
Yeah.
play and play model?
It's a good question. I feel, soccer is still a very young sport in this country, I would say. Obviously, especially now with the MLS becoming more and more a much better product, on and off the pitch. Basically, soccer is not right now the preeminent sport in the US, right? There are other sports ahead of it, right? I've already mentioned, basketball, American football, but also baseball. Do you know what I mean? There's lacrosse. There's a lot of other sports. So I feel there were more spaces, at least when I first came to the country, and from what I, know of, there were more spaces that were, like basketball court kind of areas. Do you know what I mean? Where Perhaps it wasn't quite set up for just pick up soccer, but also from a cultural standpoint, that's what I was alluding to in the first, part of my discussion is it was more of an environment where coaches, you went to play football to a professional coach would teach you how to play rather than you just playing. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's more from a cultural standpoint, right? As you said, when I was young, we would just go out and we'd just play, man, because we watched it on TV and we want to relive what we were doing out on the on TV. Do you know what I mean? So I feel, that definitely made it a lot kind of easier. And as you said, there was a lot more access to playing and stuff like that. So so there's that, and then added to that is obviously, yeah, just the fact that soccer isn't the preeminent sport, right? So perhaps, for example, like players that I coach, some of them maybe don't even watch the game. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's maybe something that is a generalization across the board. But definitely, especially in the US, we struggle to get players to kind of like watch the game, be educated by the game, and like really fall in love with the game, right? But it's a double-edged sword, as you said, right? Because if you're not playing it in your own time and it's not, it's not your decision to go and play, then perhaps, we're putting the, the cart before the horse. Do you know what I mean? Or the horse before the cart. Do you know what I mean? Whatever that statement is,
I guess, on that then, would you say there's a greater emphasis or more reliance on, I think how to best phrase it, the ability of the coaches then?
Yeah, I mean, so the structure, I think the structure of anything comes from kind of what happened before. Do you know what I mean? So, and a lot of environmental factors, right? Like the reason why there's a lot of open spaces and stuff like that in England was because football's, I think, always been, do you know what I mean? Like the preeminent sport, and people have always kind of played out at the parks, but also in the streets, and there's like the indoor areas, you know what I mean? Like just to be able to play. Over here, I feel as if also there was a big British, like a lot of coaches, when I first came out here were British, right? And so, as you said, because it's a more of a middle class sport, perhaps, perhaps the parents and the people pushed for more of a, I guess, a professionalized environment. Do you know what I mean? Because I know, even now, like my cousin's son is playing, and it's a parent coach. Do you know what I mean? That he just plays, and that's normal, right? If you're not in an academy, it's just a parent coach, and you know what I mean? It's someone who kind of played a little bit, hasn't really done a license. Perhaps they, that's getting a little bit better, but over here, it's a little bit more. Like, because there's more money in it, they expect that, you're paying thousands of dollars to be able to play at a club, especially at the higher level. So you're expecting a certain level, right?
That's
And
it's
level
interesting, right?
is inverted commas,
No,
So.
no. That's exactly where my question was going to go. And my mind's going now is that it's quite an interesting because you're because you are paying to play, the expectation is that the level is there. But what are you comparing the level to? Or
Exactly, right?
is there an
So
element of
that's,
perception that you, like you said, going back a few years, British coaches, oh yeah, that's where the game came from, if you like. So that's, they know what they're doing. If is there a kind of naivety in that respect as well?
yeah, I think there definitely is, right? There used to be a perception, when I first came, I've been here maybe 10 to 12 years now. There used to be a perception of, oh, the accent, he must know what he's talking about, kind of thing. And I really didn't know what I was talking about back then because I was first getting into coaching. All of my experiences came from, my limited number of hours kind of shadowing coaches, or kind of, my limited time on the pitch, right? So I feel, yeah, like there's a lack of education here, from the parents, especially in football in general, right? So I'm talking, the average parent here, if you're lucky, they've played the sport either at, the school level or the college level, right? But even then, right, we all know that that can almost be a hindrance, right, to a coach trying to develop a group of kids, if a parent kind of has played at a certain level, it's not the same, is it? It's not the same as development of players at, at the youth level. So it's an interesting dynamic. And as to just to add it in there, this middle to higher class kind of sport, you get a lot of parents who are very affluent who hold very highly esteemed positions, within within your club, right? Who are used to people saying yes to their requests, right? But it's very different, right? Where, for example, you're trying to develop a sense of a growth mindset and, a competition at certain levels of the game, right? When it's appropriate to do so, 15, 16, 17, right? We want to, we're preparing a lot of our players for college soccer, right? So for them to be able to do that, perhaps, it's not a conducive environment when the parent is really trying to protect their kid because, it's they've never really had to fight for anything and they've been given everything, right? So it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking there, really what you're talking about is it kind of maybe an element of diversity, adversity and resilience, right? And them not really having to face that. So, even within the context of your coaching, we do try and I think a lot of us try and create opportunities for that to kind of occur and exist within our practice, within our sessions. I guess it's somewhat comforting to kind of hear that the problem that we face with parents over here is a universal one, right? And it's,
Definitely.
I think football's, is often said, it's a game of opinions, and everyone seems to think they're an expert one as well. So it's quite an
Absolutely.
interesting one. So I mean, what are some of the biggest challenges you face? Obviously, you talk there about parents having esteemed positions in the organizations or the clubs that you might work in, but I guess what takes place. So I'm big on, I had a recent conversation with someone else around this, around education of the parents and or the stakeholders and the support networks as a whole, because in my opinion, certainly from my experience, I've never had a situation where I feel like, oh, this is just a bad parent. They're actually a bad parent.
Exactly.
It's more a case of they're just, I don't want to say misinformed, maybe underinformed or maybe miss or maybe have misinterpreted or misunderstood what it is that we're going after. And as you kind of alluded to earlier, when you're limited in your coaching experiences, you probably often maybe rely and lean on a, maybe a if you had one back a background as a player, what you did as a player, what was delivered to you as a player, as from a coaching standpoint, what depending on what generation you've come through and when you've come through your coaching qualifications and who's maybe delivered and influenced, I guess the insights on those, what coaching may or may not look like in an effective manner versus that of actually that's not coaching, because that's another debate right now, and it'd be interesting to see what it's like from your perspective as well, working out in the US and even in your role as in a director of coaching in that. What does that what does effective coaching look like for you in your environment? Because now we're getting, I think my general perception is that, especially in England, we've moved from what was a really focused technical model or technical perception of what coaching could or should look like to now one where it's less technical and more psych, social, and much more environmental.
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. So you cut off a little bit there at the end, but basically you're asking, I know you asked about the parental education first, right? So I guess I'll start there. Three words I just wrote down, as you were talking there, as like first words that kind of come to my head when I think of what the, what the I guess the, the what's missing with regards to, when you're talking to a parent, right? And this has helped, it's helped a lot becoming a father. I know obviously you've got a child, ch children or child? Three. Yeah. So, I've got a little guy now, he's four. So I understand now, the dynamic of being a parent, right? And at the end of the day, you just want the, what's best for them, right? And before I didn't quite understand, right? Because I don't think you do. Before you're a parent, it's very difficult to maybe you understand, but you can't resonate. So becoming a parent, like, it's like understanding of, look, whatever this parent is coming to me at, whatever frame that they're coming to me at, with this issue, it's coming of a frame of trying to protect their kid at the end of the day, right? So the element of cohesion, first of all, right? It's my job to help them realize that I am on their side. I'm on the kid's side, right? So anything that I do is never to break down the kid, never to disrespect the kid, never to, make the kid lose his love for the game. It's always to build them up, even if sometimes it can be through, negative means, or do you know what I mean? Challenging them, making things a little bit more difficult for them, right? So I think cohesion first, like the way that we talk needs to be in a way. I think a lot of coaches get it wrong because, they'll come with, they'll have a parent come to them with an issue immediately, and there's like the walls up immediately, like, and it will be like, prime example would be like playing time, for example, right? My kid only played 10 minutes that game. You know what I mean? This is ridiculous. You know what I mean? I'm paying this kind of money. It's just the typical one, right? And I think a lot of coaches, they'll kind of put their defense mechanisms up and be like, hey, like, they need to compete. They're not playing well enough. This is what they're not doing well. So it'd be like that headbutting where we're not really trying to cohesively, and I feel like by asking questions, that can actually be useful. Like, what characteristics do you want your son or daughter to build up within this sport, right? And they're probably going to come up with some things. I want them to work hard, I want them to be committed, whatever. So through that, do you know what I mean? We slowly begin to build
I
understanding, a
mean,
shared understanding.
I agree with you, and I think I'm fully on board with what you're saying, but I think that there's a subtlety within it as well, that it's all well and them. It's all well and good in them being able to maybe identify, list these things, but are they able to characterize and determine what they like, what these things actually look like in practice, right? So,
Fantastic. It's a great answer.
you can say you're hardworking, yeah, but what determines whether this person's hardworking? And it's a challenge I often throw to coaches as well, in saying that what Eric gives us 100% on a Monday night might look very different to Eric's 100% on a Thursday night. It doesn't mean Eric's not still giving me 100%. It's just me having to take that account, you know, that perception of what does 100% look like for Eric on this moment, and why was he able to produce it in that way? And it gets getting to know them. And I think going back to the piece about the parent, it's almost getting to them. Like the thing I always say to the parents is, "Look, I want what you want. If your child is developing, your child's enjoying it, and all the other stuff that comes with that, well, it's only going to benefit me. So you know, it's a two-way street, right? But it is, I think." And again, the way I like to view it, it's much more about collaborating with the parent rather than dealing with the parent. And I
Absolutely,
think
yeah, collaboration.
one of the biggest things that's kind of obviously, you know, for me, it's really done me well in working with parents in particular, is helping them understand what it is that we're trying to do in the environment that we're working in, why we're trying to do it in this way, and what we hope to see as a result of that. But also having those, if you like, checkpoints with them to an extent, to ensure that they've got clarity on what's actually taking place, why it's taking place, and ongoing. And as things develop and change, you know, making sure they still understand, because it can be very easy, I guess, for them with the best of intentions. It can be very easy for them to kind of come off track and, you know, lose sight of what we're going after, because it's maybe, it doesn't look like it's progressing in the way that they would want it to, or they would like it to, or even the other side of it. And probably the one of the most common ones is, "Oh, my child's not enjoying it right now." They're not going to enjoy everything, are they? And this comes back to the piece at the top, right, where you talk about, you know, almost building that resilience and that adversity into what they're doing, and understanding that actually, yeah, there is lots of things that mom and dad can do with that checkbook and make things right. But they ain't always going to be able to fix everything. It's not the answer to every
Absolutely,
problem.
yeah. And I think, case in point, I think that is probably our biggest difficulty, is helping the parents to understand that hard is not bad, right? And even our coaches, I feel as well, right? All of our coaches have this perception of, if it's not quite working, right? And obviously, we have a curriculum that we try and use, and we have coaches of varying levels, right? So perhaps a novice coach who hasn't spent much time on the grass, that might be very daunting, right? But we want them to fail, right? We want them to struggle a little bit within our parameters, because if the players aren't quite getting it, we all know, right? If there's a new exercise, right? Some possession activity that you're setting up, around the specific topic, the players probably need two or three times to really get to know the rules and the, everything within the game, to like the constraints, to be able to figure it out, right? So, I feel that a lot of parents, right, and coaches, I think it's just human nature, that, we want success immediately, right? And as you said,
Is it,
success is, I don't know, like I
or is it a
definitely, I don't
generational
know,
thing?
maybe. I feel as if we're very, and again, this is a generalization because there are those that kind of are, kind of bridge that gap and can do better, but you need to be very self-aware of what success looks like, right? What does success look like? Success isn't the outcome, right?
But in the eyes of
Success
who, though,
is,
right?
that's it as well. It's a very subjective kind of point of
I mean,
view,
because one
right?
of the often the conversations I often have with parents, and it's almost retraining their perception of their mind, if you like, to an extent, in the sense that we, at the end of the day, I think we both agree that development isn't a linear process, right? It goes up, it goes down, but or rather, learning isn't a linear process, but development can be. It can be a linear process, but actually what happens in the process of that development isn't always demonstrated in the same way. So it's not always based on what happened technically. It could just be what's happening up here. But that's less obviously measurable than than what they're doing on the pitch, if you like. And the one thing I always challenge parents with is, all right, well, outside of using goals scored, assists, a number of minutes, define development. And still to this day, I haven't met a parent that can. And it's not a bad thing. It's kind of an indication of maybe where they're placing their sights on in terms of what
But do
development
you
does
think,
look like.
that coaches can do that too? Because
No, I
I
don't.
know a lot of
I don't.
coaches. Exactly, right?
But
Yeah, exactly.
then I also think that's a generational thing, because I also think that's maybe a representation of, and I use this loosely, but where coach education's gone over the last decade or so. And not just in England, I think just across the board, I think we have moved away from what was a heavily technical focused model or a perception of what coaching should or could look like, to one where it's less about what's happening on the pitch and more about what's happening up here for the individual, which I understand, and it's got its benefits and its pros and its cons, but fundamentally, you still have to be able to do the job at a certain point. So
Absolutely.
it's less, I mean, I guess through my own experiences, I've kind of gone, it's interesting, I have these conversations with some people sometimes, and it's like I've gone from being one end of the spectrum to kind of to the other end of the spectrum. I kind of found myself, somewhere balanced in the middle now, where it's actually, well, no, that stuff is important. The environment is important. We need to make sure they're enjoying it. We need to make sure. But actually, what is enjoyment? Enjoyment is not the same as fun for me, right? For me, yeah, we can make it fun, but fun doesn't equal development, in my opinion. It can. It can be a, I guess, a byproduct of development, or it can be vice versa. But fundamentally, enjoyment doesn't have to be fun all the time. Enjoyment could come from the pure fact of actually that shit was hard. It went through a tough patch, 6, 7 weeks of bad results, or whatever it might look like. But actually, through the process of questioning, through the process of reflection, through the process of self-reflection, as well as that support of my peers and my coaches and the other people around me, I've now understood more on how to get better from that situation, to the point where I've actually become better. Actually, looking back, I've enjoyed that process. So that could be enjoyment in itself, right? Going through the resilience and the adversity of those challenges.
But that's exactly it. Yes, it's the understanding that, enjoyment doesn't have to be fun all the time, right? And it's that understanding of setting the expectations early with regards to, look, I think it's useful. Like, so I do a little bit of performance coaching on the side. So I do mental skills training and stuff with players, youth athletes, but also some collegiate and professional players, right? And a lot of the time through my conversations and my coaching, one of the main things that, through one of our first conversations is, a lot of these players are outcome focused, right? So they base performance on the outcome, whether they scored, whether they got an assist, or whatever it is, right? And that's a very fickle process, right? It's
Yeah, but it's
very, it's
often,
la
as you
it's
referred to
no
earlier.
control. There's
Yeah,
no control in that, right?
exactly.
Yeah. So as you're saying, I think this comes from the top down, right? It's, with regards to clubs, if you have a style of play, a blueprint of how you want to play, it's all very good and well, developing kind of that on paper. But I feel like one of the things that we're trying to do at the club right now is now, okay, you develop whatever your style, your principles, your sub principles, and then what that looks like with regards to player actions and team actions in the four phases. But then for me, that needs to be matched with video, right? Like, what are examples of these behaviors, as you're saying? And
I'm so
then
glad you
can you
mentioned
break
it.
it down, right?
Yeah, and I think the thing is that even within, I guess, where I don't necessarily work for a team, I'm less kind of, and even to be fair, just in my general passions around coaching, and I'm less focused around a style of play. And I was interested. I was thinking about this just yesterday, and I think to myself, would I consider myself a team coach, or I'm more of an individual coach? And I think I'm much more leaning towards an individual coach, in the sense that just because of the nature of the work I do, and it's largely around coach development and coaching specifically, but it's kind of led me down a path where a lot of my focus is on how do we develop the individuals. So there's less focus on having a style of play. And to be honest with you, I don't really believe there should be a style of play. Fundamentally, whatever plan A might be, well, plan A goes out the window as soon as the opposition do X, right? So then you don't have to have plan B and plan C, or whatever that might look like. But fundamentally, it comes back to the game principles. If the principles of play are in focus, it's just understanding, well, what do those principles look like at any given moment? And it's kind of led me to this path where I've got like three kind of key pillars in my coaching. And it's that the first one is, well, it's got to be representative. So the game, it has to be, for me, everything I do. In fact, there's not a single thing I do outside of maybe just if I was working with you as an individual that would be unopposed. I just don't. And then people say, oh, well, you've got, no, it's got a place. But for me, in my own opinion, in my own experiences, its place is never at the top of the hierarchy. And in actual fact, I'd throw it out there and say that in order for it to be effective and efficient, in my opinion, it's probably the most skillful part of coaching to be able to make your unopposed practice truly effective and efficient in a transferable manner. And I can give an example of that if you like as well. But then in the kind of other two key pillars is, I'm a big believer that we all have the answers if we're asked the right questions, right?
Agreed.
So for me, it's really key for me, the Q&A process. It's not just, no, I want to get to the real heart of it. I want to really probe you and challenge your thinking, stretch your thinking around what you're doing, why you're doing it, and when you might need to change what you're doing and why you might need to change it. So having a real perception and understanding of what's going on in the moment, what have you considered, what have you not considered. And it can be quite a long-winded process sometimes, but I also have a saying that I say, well, the more work you do on the front end, the easier the ride is on the back end of it, right? And then the third kind of pillar that I really focus on is show and tell.
Fantastic.
I can't even tell you how many times I've probably done it myself in the past, where we, as coaches, we can be very lazy at times in, I'm just going to tell you what I want to see and hopefully you're going to do it. How often have we done that and we end up having to show them anyway? Just show them from the beginning. Give them an example from the beginning of what you're looking for. And if it's not an example of how it looks in terms of what the process is, make it clear on what the outcome is. They've got a clear outcome. So I don't need to tell you how you're going to do it. I don't need to show you, demonstrate specifically how you should do it. Although if that supports your learning and development in that moment, then here's an example of what it could look like. But fundamentally, the outcome is what we're going after is this. So all I need you to focus on, Eric, is getting that ball to Dan on the other side of the box. How you do it is up to you. But here's the situation. Let's examine the situation and let you come up with a way to do it. So it has to have that
That's
show and tell
fantastic.
piece, whether that's me using a demonstration. And this is another challenge for coaches, right?
doesn't always have to be you as the coach demonstrating it. Yes, I do agree, and I do see the point that people make and saying that, well, it definitely adds credibility. But if you know what you're talking about and you get your message across, that bit very, very quickly falls aside.
Absolutely, man. No. And I love the fact that you've kind of been able to be self-aware enough to kind of really look at what you believe in, right? Based off of, everything that you've done within the game, like what really resonates with you, right? That's the tough part in today's day and age, is with the wealth of information, books, YouTube, this, that, everywhere, right? At the top level. It can be very easy to just take everything that's given to you, right? And then, you don't have a real sense of who you are as a coach, right? So I feel, when you're taking licenses and stuff like that, there needs to be kind of a filter involved where, when you do something, you almost need a filter for yourself to be like, okay, what did I really agree with in this, and what resonated with me? What definitely didn't resonate with me? And now, the most important part is the iterative process, right? Like, what am I going to change with what I do now based on this information? So I think, like, we want to bring in information, more information, more information, podcasts, freaking, then I'm going to jump on a course, then I'm going to take my license. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of this information for coaches, when in actual fact, one of the big things that they're not doing is they're not iterating. So they're not, but taking this information and realizing, okay, within my context, within my environment, and based on what I believe in right now, what part of that information is useful for me to be able to use? And then now, can I create an action plan over the next 3 months to, like, okay, how am I going to use this information? Show and tell is a perfect example, right? Of,
And I think
yeah.
just on that, I think it's a great point. I think the other thing to kind of really just add on there is that there will be things that you can see usefulness in now, but might not be relevant to the context you're currently working in. So it's almost actually, can I be effective and I guess curious enough to be able to assess information, say, actually, that's really useful information, but for my context at this present moment, it's something I'm gonna have just to park off, if that makes sense.
100%. Yeah, exactly. And that, that's an interesting one, because, yeah, I think in today's day and age, we want to be able to use information, like, right now. Do you know what I mean? So, like, you're learning about video analysis on a lot of these courses, right? That's a new one. And individualized, position specific training, right? Because that's like the new thing, right? Everyone wants to kind of set piece coaching, all of that. So all the coaches want to use that. But as you're saying, right, it's like you want to pick up different skills that you can now be able to use in your in you know in the future. Do you know what I mean? So I agree. And I mean, look, with coach education, so I do a bit of coach education as well for US soccer. So I teach the C licenses, and within that, it's funny, you mentioned obviously never unopposed, right? You said you always know the answer. Or you mentioned something like you're like, deep down you know the answer, right? Like, to the question, right? Is that what you is that what you
No, not
meant?
not specifically, but we know what we're going after. We know what
Yeah.
we're going after. And I'm very reluctant to say yes, we know the answer. I think the better way to put it is we know an answer.
Yes. So, as you mentioned, like, the what rather than the how, right? It,
Yeah.
like the yeah, like the outcome. We know what
But
we the outcome we want.
I think it's deeper than that, Eric. I think it's it's this piece that we look at is you've got your de you know the what, but you also understand the why behind that what, which then dictates and helps you unpack and I guess explore the how of that situation, right? Because if you understand the what and the why and the how that is attached to it, you'll also understand when that how, or rather, yeah, when, not necessarily how the how, but when the how then needs to be different because something else has changed.
So we're talking about context here, right? So can you give an
Yeah.
example of yeah.
Okay, I'm just thinking about previous experiences. So there was a period of time where I was working specifically with goalkeepers. So I did a lot of kind of I don't want to call it research specifically, but I did a lot of studying around crosses coming in and typical areas where crosses might go based on where the ball's being crossed from. And just start, I've got this belief as well that, I'm not sure what you think of this or whether it's something you'd agree with, but that football is just a game of patterns, right? I think, you see it enough times, you're not going to always, there's nothing, no two moments are ever going to be exactly the same, but there's enough of a pattern in there for you to, for people to, I guess, develop an anticipation of what's going to happen next. So as an example of that, if I go back to the crosses, right, if I'm get right in the corner, I'm in the wide areas of the pitch, if you like, well, typically it's going to be either stop at the far post or maybe cut back towards the second 6 yard box. So that, that's just one example. Now, if I know that that's what I'm expecting to happen based on what my experience is telling me, then I can better prepare for that. But I also now recognize that actually the moment it goes from being right in the wide area to coming maybe just inside the box, those angles that that ball that might get released at may change. But it's understanding when does one become the other. And it's not, there's no black and white specifically, but do I understand where the gray area may begin and where the gray area might begin to end? And as
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's what I'm getting. And if I've got a good enough understanding of where the gray areas start to kind of insert themselves into the different pictures, then hopefully that will give me a better understanding of when my how now needs to change in response to the what and the why.
So what you're saying there really, have you heard of Bloom's taxonomy?
I've heard of it.
It's yeah. So
Yeah.
basically, it's used it a lot in like teaching and education, but it's based on like levels of understanding, right? So for example, if we are and a lot of our like the coaches that I work with at the club, more novice coaches, you go through this process as a coach, right? Where it's kind of, I think they call it Dunning-Kruger, right? Where you feel as, I don't know if this one's Dunning-Kruger, but you feel as if when you first get into coaching, like, and you take like your first license, you feel like you're an expert. You know every answer to every question, right? But as you say, the more you get to know, like you get to know a little bit more if you go past that point, it's
Yeah.
like then you just realize you know nothing about
Yeah.
football, right? Because as you say, there's so many gray areas. There's no one answer to the questions that you're asking. And my players get constantly annoyed with me because they just want me to tell them what the answer to the quiz is, right?
But I think this is where the challenge comes, though, and I think it's a great point to make and to highlight that. It's okay for them to get frustrated, and but it only becomes valid to get frustrated when you, as a coach, in my opinion, don't have an answer for them. I think what's not good enough, and I think this is what we're in danger of as a just a collective in the industry of football, in coaching in particular, is coaches not having an answer.
Yes, correct. Correct, yeah.
I'm not saying you have to have the answer, but you need to have a way, and it
But
can't be.
that's yeah, exactly. So you're right in that sense. There's that sweet spot in the middle between that guided discovery, where if you go too far to guided discovery, it's like that coach on the sideline that is just saying absolutely nothing, and it's just completely laissez-faire, right? At the halftime team talk, there's no real information given because, let the game be the teacher. That's like the one that they rely on, right? All these coaches, right? Because it's like, the kids will figure it out. But no, this is why you're a coach, right? This is why you are, why you're here is, yeah, you want to help the players learn and develop. But as you're saying, this is what it goes back to my original point of Bloom's taxonomy. Like it's very easy for like so there's lower levels of understanding, and at lowest levels of understanding, it would be things like comprehension. So you know the meaning of an inside cut, for example, right? So very low base level kind of textbook kind of information. But then the higher levels you go, It goes into things like the ability to synthesize information, right? So now, as you use the goalkeeper analogy, now I know that, usually when, this left winger is in the wide area and they beat the defender on, on the outside, if they turn a specific way, usually this means that, they're going to stand up across towards the back post, right? Versus they're coming for this, this pullback so that I need to get set on my, like, close to my line. Do you know what I mean? So that ability to synthesize new, so like, as you said, the situation is always slightly different. So it's like nuanced information to be able to now, basically build this pattern recognition in your head to be like, do you know what I mean? Like this new information. So basically, there's higher levels of understanding. The higher levels of understanding that we go, analysis, synthesis of information, then we get a deeper understanding of
100%. So
information.
again, it comes back to that piece around, I'm not just coaching you the what, but these are the whys, and now you can work out how, and the how becomes, well, here's a way of doing it. But in your case, Eric might be 6'2" and a bit slow off his line, so he might want to pick up a different position as opposed to John, who's 6'5" and rapping off his line or whatever that looks like, right? So, but that's where the subjective piece comes in. But first and foremost, I've given you enough context around the outcome that we're going to be dealing with for you to be able to decide on what the process looks like.
And let me, this is a great point as well, because I think you mentioned a great point earlier about as coaches, we need an answer, right? Which is 100% correct. But I feel that depending on the context, the player only seeks the answer when they're in a high pressure situation. So obviously I coach games because I'm in a team environment, right? So, case in point, the right winger, is struggling to receive the ball, in the middle third, right? Because I don't know, right? Like, the opposition is compact in central areas, right? Struggling to get on the ball, not enough space, not enough time, right? So they're like turning to me, like, coach, I can't get the ball, I can't get the ball. What do I do? What do I do? Right? So I feel that in that situation, nothing more than a telling them, okay, when the centre back gets his head up, right, and the outside back's wide, pop into this gap, right, double movement, check away as if you're going in behind, check into the space, and that should give you enough space to be able to receive the ball, right, which is an answer, right, that
I
might
mean, to be
work
honest, I probably wouldn't
in
even
certain
go that.
situations.
I probably personally wouldn't even go down that route. I'd probably go down the route of, well, what's happening? Can you tell me what's
But no,
happening?
but this is what I'm saying. This is the question. You're absolutely right. But now, if so, it's all about context, right? Because in the middle of a game, let's say, like, so this is during the game, right? This is during the game where they're physically getting, just like, frustrated, and you can see that it's affecting their game, right? As a coach, unless we bring them off to the side, right? There's for me. Like in my situation, I'm absolutely with you, right? I'd obviously be waiting till half time because I'd almost be like asking them questions so that now they can figure out the right questions to ask at half time. Like, what are you struggling with? What are you struggling with? Like, why
To
is
be
it
honest with
happening?
you, I'm even thinking about it right now. I probably would be somewhere in between. I'll probably be having that conversation which you're referring to at half time while the game's going on. I'll pull them aside while it's happening, because
But that's the question, right? Because you're right in the sense that. Because it is, I agree with you as an educator. Like at the end of the day, that is the best way for them to learn is to have that conversation right there and then when it's happening. When realistically, when they probably should be having it is during a practice, where we're working on this type of situation because that's perfect, right?
100%. But I think, now that I'm thinking about it as you're speaking there, I'm firmly in belief of the phrase strike it while the iron's hot. But more specifically, it's thinking about it from a perspective of catch them when the stakes are high. Catch them when the stakes are high, because I've got you. You need to
Absolutely, yeah.
focus now. You need to We need to
But
have the
let
conversation.
me ask you this then. I
Go
agree
on.
with you, but now it's devil's advocate because you can't stop the game. You can't show them the picture, right? The actual picture. So obviously you're just a little bit more limited as to the, your coaching toolbox as to the information that you use, right? So how would you, so use that example of the right winger, like what questions would you ask?
So using that exact example, I mean, the first thing I'll be saying, right, well, where are you, and where's the opposition? That's probably the first one. So they've got big the pitch geography starting to kind of, I guess, make sense to them. The second piece is, right, you're saying you can't get on the ball, but is the ball ever coming in your direction? Because it's all well and good me being frustrated about the ball not coming to me, but actually, if the ball's never coming here in the first place, what am I getting frustrated about? Because the person on the ball hasn't even seen me to. All right, brilliant. So if that's I guess a root cause of the issue, then okay. So how do we get the ball to come out here more often then? So then it's just unpacking that with them. And like I said, I go back to what I said earlier. The challenge that's often been thrown at me, and I can appreciate would be thrown at me was, yeah, but isn't this a bit long-winded? Yeah, it is. But guess what? I never have to do it again. Because what they remember now in this conversation, if I can make this conversation impactful enough, 3 months down the line, if this same thing happens again, all I have to say is, Eric, remember that conversation we had? What were your key takeaways? And if the conversation was impactful enough, I don't even have to continue it from there. So again, doing the work on the front end so the rest of the ride is a bit easier is kind of how I look at it. And yeah, I get challenges all the time. So yes, yeah, but you're spending too much time talking to them. Someone's got to do it. They're going to learn somewhere. I'd rather them
Absolutely,
learn
yeah.
now than when the stakes are too high.
Absolutely, but that's it as well, right? Is because there's such a focus on, I think that's the tough part with the science and, all of the information that we've gleaned from the environments that we're trying to create, right? Is it's almost too structured in a way. Like almost the opposite way, right? Of just letting them play, meaning, they're going to learn through experience. They're going to make their own mistakes. When you make a coaching point, it needs to be in and out within 30 seconds. You know what I mean? There's certain things that we're saying to coaches that, it's a gray area. Do you know what I mean? If you're describing it, why get in and out 30 seconds? If they don't understand, they obviously need something more impactful that is going to, actually change behavior. At the end of the day, we need something that things are only going to change our behavior when we there's a stimulus involved that is sometimes perhaps not very positive. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes it
But again, that's
that
perception, right? Because the positive piece could be, and again, it's off a conversation I had recently. Sometimes one of the questions I always like to ask players and is, can you share with me a time where you think you've been coached well? And can you share with me a time where you think you've received poor coaching? And it's interesting because I asked that question, one, to see what their perception is, but two, to understand actually, was it the methodology behind the coaching that might have been poor? Obviously, you don't have the full context, you don't have the full ins and outs, but was it the methodology that was poor or how it was actually delivered? Because how it was delivered could be the issue rather than the method itself. So, me and you can both go down the route of asking questions to players, but actually, if one of us asks very direct and blunt questions, then we're not going to get much out of it. So then a player might perceive that as, oh, I don't like being asked questions. Because it puts me under pressure, rather than if they've been in an environment where a question has been asked and they've been allowed to, I guess, openly and honestly answer without fear of judgment or fear of, any sort of negative consequence off the back of it, right? Now all of a sudden you say, well, actually, that players you can, they're probably going to thrive in environments where they're being asked questions, but actually probably will learn more from it because they've been provided with an environment where the question has just been genuinely open. So I think it's interesting to get perceptions of the players from that perspective as well.
Last part on that, I think, is just individualizing the type of feedback you're giving to players, right? There's certain players who don't need that, don't want that, and they just want you, if they ask you, well, first of all, there's some that will never ask you a question and they just need to kind of experience and kind of figure it out. Maybe you're more kinesthetic learner, right? Versus the one that they need your support. Maybe from a psychosocial aspect of they just need to know you're here, that you're there
Well,
for them. Do you know what I
I think that's
mean?
it, right? They need to know that you're here, and I think it's, yeah. The one thing I'm just now thinking about it out loud is just as you're speaking there, that I always try and make an effort to kind of really highlight It's, I don't need you to buy into how I'm coaching, but I need you to understand why I'm doing it. And the why is always to help you get better. And if you get better, then we're both winners here. And so I think it just coming full circle to the what you said at the top is around outlining expectations. And the point I was going to make earlier, actually, when you mentioned that, is well, have your expectations, but be open enough to understand that actually you may need to change those expectations, and that's okay too, as long as those things have been clarified and agreed upon. So I think that in itself is, is just managing those expectations throughout the process. And like I said, for me, when I'm working with players in the environment I work in, or if I'm working with parents and helping them understand what my coaching might look like, it's just really getting them to understand. At times it might look like this, at times it might look like this, but here are some key things that I'm going to be going after, and here are some things that I'm going to personally look to try and measure. But actually, some of the, and I think this is the key, this is the biggest challenge, is some of these things can't objectively be measured, right? So it is just an observation rather than this one moment or this exact thing over here. It isn't about 10 goals. It's about, well, have we seen the development? And when things aren't going well, what actually happened in the context of that game? Because it's easy to turn around and say, oh, well, yeah, it's not been enough goals, not been enough shots or whatever. Okay, yeah, but you're playing against Man City, who've got the tightest back four. Now what? Are we going to have the same expectations? Or is it, again, it's just going back to managing those expectations, right?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And I think that's perhaps one of the toughest parts of coaching, right? Is not quite obviously at the pro level, you kind of expect something, right? But I'm a Spurs fan, I'll be honest, right? So sorry for some, right? But since Ange has come in, right? For me, it is like that's a lesson for a lot of youth coaches with regards to understanding how you want to play, regardless of style or whatever, right? How you want to play. It's a mentality more than patterns, movements. I'm sure there's a lot involved with regards to exactly what he wants to do, but it doesn't matter what 11 are available. You know that he's going to go after the game from a mentality standpoint. So from a player's standpoint, I feel that that sets the tone for how you want to play, right? I feel that, like, I think a lot of players would want to play in that type of environment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think because there's a clear vision, right? I think that, but I think the if you are going to go down that way of having one set way of playing, you need to understand what's going to allow it and to and not work, right? So it comes back to that how. The how is influenced by the why. This is what we want to do. This is what we need to make it happen, right? So that's still the what though. The why, well, why we need this is because we need X, Y, Z. Da, 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 da. Okay, so how does that look? Well, actually, when Eric's doing it in comparison to when Yas is doing it, it might look like this, but actually, the framework is effectively the same. And this is, again, another thing I always come back to. If we're talking about teaching technique as an example, and I think one of the things that we have in, well, that we lack in football in particular, we don't have like a universally agreed upon framework, right? Whereas, which is a lot of other industries and even some sports have. And I think that's where it is so subjective in it. But I think there needs to be some objectivity within it as well. So I think it's little things like, if we're teaching like the principles of the play as an example, the game is based on those. There is no other way to play the game. Now, that's not to say that they look a certain way, but they are the principles. That is how it works. So
Absolutely.
how it will look for you and how it looks for me. So how it looks for Pep, how it looks for Klopp, how it looks for, go back 20 years ago and, whoever else was out there then.
Absolutely.
All they're doing is presenting the principles of play in the way that they see fit. But it's still the principles in action, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And I
Yeah,
think that's
it's
the
the
key piece,
constants.
right?
Those are the constants of the game, right? Like,
100%,
in the sport.
and I think that, if we go back to what we were saying earlier about, just my thoughts in terms of where coach education has gone and, just around the world generally, is I think we moved away from the point of how important those principles actually are to the point where people, and I'm generalizing here, and I'll say it loosely, but think they can just design a way of playing and it's just how they want to play. with no purpose. I think, you know, the challenge always throughout is coaches, when you're thinking about the way that you want to play, is whether you're looking at in possession, out of possession, whether it's how you want to press, how you want to move the ball around. If it's in possession, it's I want to do this in order to penetrate. Just add that piece on the end. It just shifts the whole perception of everything you're doing. Or on the flip side, out of possession, we want to be able to do this in order to stop the opposition from penetrating. Or, you know, however you, but if you just add that little phrase on the end of whatever it is that you're looking at, all of a sudden the picture changes.
So it's funny you say that. Like I'm a so the way that the C license works over here is a lot of like it's hybrid, right? So a lot of you know there's a kind of a week in person, like kind of in like week 5 or 6, but a lot of it is you know online sessions, right? They need to record their sessions and things like that. But within what you just said there, you know, within the training sessions that they're creating. And this is where it comes back to something you said before, where there's a little bit too much freedom with regards to exactly how they structure a session and stuff. Even with the methodology, it's changed considerably. And so, as you say, like, and when they're trying to develop the objective for their training sessions, it's not clear enough, right? You know, one of them, for example, you know, we want to improve the ability to play a split pass, right? When like again, like there's no context there, right? With regards to, you know, as you said, like a lot of my feedback is okay, what's the what first of all? So what is the objective, right? Where are you on the field and who are you really focusing on here within your training context? But you know, there's certain like pieces of information within the framework that you can use. So basically, US soccer has a game idea that that is almost like a framework based on the principles of play that we use in this within the middle, like the third of the field, just so that, as you're mentioning, we have a starting point with which to discuss the game, right? With regards to, you know, you know, for example, there's an objective from the defensive third to the middle third is to advance the ball. To the middle third, do you know what I mean? At
Penetrate.
the end of the day, it d doesn't matter who, what style you're playing, and what
Exactly.
country,
That should be the
that's it,
objective.
right? But that's it, exactly,
That's the only way
right?
that you're going to win the game, right? And I mean,
Exactly.
mind you, the phrase I always kind of say to coaches to think about, I'll use passing it. Just because you're working on a pass doesn't mean you're working on a pass. Just because passing taking place, just because passing is taking place, doesn't mean passing is being developed. And what I mean by that specifically, you know, coming back to the three pillars I talked about earlier, if it doesn't look like it would in a game, it doesn't mean you have to play a game. And I want people to really understand that is that. I'm not saying just go out there and play games because I'm also not a firm believer of that either because I think there is a time and place for that. But you have to ask yourself, well, if it doesn't look like it, like one of the biggest bugbears of mine is rondos as an example, right? I can't stand them. I just can't stand them. They as the research even suggests they're ineffective, right? You know where the players are, so you don't have to scan. You know where, because all you're focused on is actually just moving the ball from left to right. There's no deliberate or intentional efforts to try and move the ball in a direction that is actually going to penetrate. And if you go back to your example a few moments ago, play a pass splits a line. There's no need for that. And then if the defenders in a rondo, as an example, don't have a reference point as to what they're defending and what they're attacking, well, they're not defending effectively or appropriately in relation to the game either. So what are you really working on there? And I think just little things like that. So, you know, coming back to principles in terms of how maybe design and practice, make everything directional, not multi-directional, make everything transitional so that there's not an element of, all right, Eric's just won the ball off. Yeah, so another practice is dead, we start again. No, Eric's got to have an outcome because sooner or later, Eric's outcome is going to dictate how he decides to win that ball back or whether he
Exactly.
decides
No,
to win that
absolutely.
ball back. Fundamentally, is your practice presenting the same variables or as close to as possible that the game would be presenting them? And if they're not, then you're not working on the game, in my opinion.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think definitely rondos, which are non-directional, right? I mean, you know, I would call a positional rondo a positional game, right? Where you're going in a specific direction. and there's at least an end line or goal involved, right? That's a little bit different, right? But if it's just the, boxes, as maybe some people call them, right, where it's like two or three in the middle and it's just like, almost circular, right? From developing, like maybe there is a technical and
Is there really?
a
Is there really though?
I don't know.
That's the question I'm putting out there. You might be getting it's like okay. Ball in the wall. It's got a benefit. It's got some returns. The challenge I put, I don't have all the, I don't know what the answers are, if I'm being honest. I don't know the answer. But what I do know is if there's a way for me to move at 30 miles an hour rather than 10, I want to find it.
Absolutely. So, and this is probably another rabbit hole, but have you read a book by Doug Lamov, his book on coaching?
I think I know the
Can't
one you're talking
remember.
about. I've actually
The
had Doug on the
coach is
podcast as well.
something.
The
Oh,
coaches,
really? Yeah.
So I've had Doug on. I've had a few conversations. In
Okay.
fact, I've
But basically, yeah, put it in
delivered
the
a couple
show
workshops
notes,
with him
right?
before as well.
Oh, really? That's so great because, I mean, he. Incredible kind
How
of
is it? Is
he's
it a teacher's guide to coaching or?
that's it, yeah. Coach's Guide to Teaching, I think.
That's the
yeah
one. That's the
um
one.
yeah no absolutely We got there eventually, but basically within that he explains the reason behind unopposed work, right? Meaning at a certain level, technical and correct me if I'm wrong, right, technical work that is unopposed now becomes imprinted within the subconscious, wherever you want to call it, so that now when we are playing, in an environment where there is opposition, less of our working memory needs to be given to thinking about the technique involved, right?
Yeah, but then the problem is with that though, Eric, is that that technique is dependent on certain things being present,
Understood. Okay. Yeah. So
right? Because the
it's
fundamental
unopposed.
thing is you could strike that ball, like let's just say me and you're doing a passing practice back and forth, 10 yards apart. You're just passing it all back and forth. One thing's for certain, not a single one of your passes or my passes will be identical every time. That's a fact, right? It will be virtually impossible to recreate the exact same pass again. So something's going to be different anyway. So what's technique anyway, right? So if we go on that down that spectrum, right, and look at it from that perspective, you've got what I like to think of as universal technique, right? A universal principles of technique, and then subjective principles of technique. Universal principles of technique meaning, okay, if me and you are 10 yards apart and we're in a straight line, if you like, facing each other. But one thing's for certain, unless I hit the ball through the middle, it's not going towards you. It's not going to happen. It doesn't matter whether I use my foot, whether I use my elbow, whether I use my knee, whatever part of the body I want to use. Even if I would choose not to use my body parts and blow the ball, unless I blow it in that direction, it's not going to go towards you. That is a universal principle, right? But who am I to tell you how to get it done? As long as it gets done. And why do I care if it does get done? Right? And I use the example all the time with that. Erling Haaland has just been bought for Man City last year. Do you think, I don't know how many goals he scored, 50 odd goals, right? 40, 50 goals. Do you think it will make a difference to him or Pep Guardiola if every single one of his goals came off his right kneecap? It will make a damn difference. So why do we care how it's being done as long as it's getting done, right? Who's to say that that's not a new revolutionary technique that can be utilized and taken advantage of by that one individual? But then, if you come back to that, again, the example of I've just given 10 yards away from each other, me and you passing the ball. Well, the bottom line is this: we can work on that technique all we want, but the moment someone else steps in between us, that technique has gone out the damn window because it's no longer relevant. Hence why I said, earlier that I think true, in my opinion, unopposed activity done with true benefit is the highest form of technical coaching you can get to. Because you need to be able to not only teach the technique or help players understand the technique, but actually, in my opinion, the only way it can be done to move 30 miles an hour rather than the 10 is if you can bring the context to it through a visualization, show and tell standpoint. And without that, in my
Yeah, but
opinion,
what I'm saying, I agree with the the idea. I just feel that, I also feel that certain players need, like, it will be too much for certain players to, of players of a certain level, right? Because I think we're talking
Give me an
perhaps,
example.
so I feel a player who's a novice player who's been playing maybe for, let's say, 3 or 4 years, who cannot receive the ball effectively.
But what's receiving the ball effectively? If
Okay,
the
sorry. Okay,
opposition
yeah,
player is
no,
not
I
there,
understand. I understand, yeah.
so what I've get, but even if I use that novice player as an example, well, the only difference between the novice and the expert is the expert seen it enough times where they don't have to physically be shown it, because they can go off.
But here's the chicken and egg question, right? Is how did the player learn how to receive the ball? Did they learn to receive the ball under pressure immediately, like from day one? Maybe that's my
Well, this is the
question.
thing. So I'll give you an example, and I've tried this out, and this is why I'm so firmly behind the idea of it. I remember doing running a project about what will be now 2024, blimey.
I know,
This
right?
is probably 2017, so about 7 years ago, running this project, and we had kids from and these kids who've never kicked a ball from age 4 right up to 10, never kicked a ball. Straight off the bat, you're doing 1v1s, you're working against someone constantly. And the practice, we did literally the same thing every single week for about 6 7 months. And I kid you not, yeah, I was gobsmacked by how quickly I saw the development. And it was literally 1v1 to start with. I think because I want to say it was a 90 minute session, the 20 minutes, it was just 1v1. But within that, every kind of 2 3 minutes, it'll go from me versus Eric to me versus John, me versus John versus someone else versus someone else versus someone. So you're just rotating constantly on a rotation, right? Why the rotation? Well, first and foremost, you are going to be different to me, so I want the players to get comfortable facing different opponents. Okay, the context of the situation might be the same, but the challenge within it is different. So for some players I come up against, I might be quicker than them, I could be stronger than them, I could be smaller than them, I could be taller than them, I could be whatever. But it gives me a range of different scenarios to work within, despite this being the one context. That'll be 1v1 for 20 minutes, rotate the opponents. Then we just develop that and move it into a 2v2. Then we develop that and move it into a 3v3. And then we just play some fun games. And that was it. Never unopposed work, never anything else. Always. The key bit, and if I come back to the coaching principles I talked about earlier, is right, what's the situation? Who are you facing? What's the challenge you're facing? Right. What might you need to do to kind of overcome that challenge? What are some of the things that that person might find as a weakness in this situation, as an example? Just to really
So
just
you're saying obviously that it needs to be context specific, meaning like there needs to
every time.
be something that is, yeah. So I, again, I understand, and I'm not going to say but, I'll say and. I feel, and this is just based on my background, and again, that the book that I mentioned really helped to frame this for me. Is that, again, I know you're mentioning it, the context is specific, but maybe receiving the ball in any context, right? If you're just playing that 10 yards, but I do believe that different, over different yards from different angles is going to now, from a muscle memory standpoint, like the skill acquisition is going to be better if you do that over, let's say, a certain number of hours. Again, we are going from 10 miles an hour to eventually get to 30 miles per hour, but I feel as if
I'm
30
saying we could
miles per hour is going
start
to
at
be much
30 or not.
easier.
I'm saying we could start
Maybe,
at,
maybe, maybe, but I
right?
feel as if that's what I'm saying. So I feel as if you're starting at 30 miles an hour, again, for certain players, I feel as if they're going to be able to, as you said, certain contexts.
But I've got a solution
But
for that too.
what's
I've got a
that?
solution for that. The solution's simple. You create safe zones. So as an example, if we're doing a 1v1 practice, right? I might say to you, right, let's just say you've got an end line, I've got an end line. Let's just say there's 20 yards. Yeah, 20 by 10 or whatever, right? 10 width, 20, 24. I might say to you, right, here's how it's going to work. We've got safe zones. So safe zones meaning the whole area is free to go in. But actually, Eric, you can only tackle me in these three boxes. But the boxes are set up in a way where, regardless of what route I take, I have to pass them at some point. Right? So now we're looking at the design of the practice. So I'll get opportunities where I can come away from you and still have the opportunity to dribble and unopposed, but actually I still at some point have to counter you.
Wow.
And now all of a
Didn't
sudden it's
realize that,
actually
yeah.
okay. It's still opposed, but it's not fully opposed and it's definitely not unopposed.
Love that. Love that. No, I like, and yeah, you have you found that solution. That's great, because I feel, yeah, no, exactly. But that's what I'm talking about is, and again, I've been trying to, and I don't do as much on the individual side anymore, right? But more the constraint side with regards to within small-sided games, right? To bring out certain topics. But as you're saying, right? Thinking outside the box to aid the player, right? So, give a player certain affordances that they can use that will help them within the process of obviously achieving a task, right? That is not going to be
Well, it's
non-game
the way I see
specific,
it
right?
is
It's
this.
not.
Again, it allows us to some extent, in my opinion, to move at 30 miles an hour, although it being a very bumpy ride to begin with. Because the quicker you deal with the bumps, the quicker you get to the smoother part. Whereas
100%.
if I
No,
start you off
brilliant.
smooth and then throw you into some bumps, I'm gonna have to get you back to smooth eventually anyway. So why don't I just start you off with bumps and skip the whole first phase
And
out?
that's full circle. That's full circle right there, right? Yes, it's full circle, because we started this conversation saying that adversity is, it needs to be inherent, right? For players
100%.
to be able to, yeah, for them to be able to achieve what they want to achieve in the long term, right? Which is to improve and get to the, achieve their fullest potential to become the best player that they want to be, is, as you said, so great. You've persuaded me. Fantastic. The next step is we honestly, because this is what I've been thinking as well, is content for coaches that will give them ideas and understanding on exactly what you said within team and individual practices, is helping them think about ways to, within a non, within a within an opposed environment, right? Whether that be 1v1 to 11v11, how can we aid players that perhaps, players from the highest level player to players who are just starting to play the game? How can we still create that type of environment, right? Where adversity is inherent within the environment,
100%.
and
But I think
development
another
is
thing that,
accelerated.
and I think another thing that just kind of comes on top of that, just to kind of support it further, is the coach's ability to hold the players accountable. Right? In it, again, a consideration always throughout there for coaches to think about is, if we look at praise as an example, when does your praise go from something being great to it just being good? At one point, you weren't able to do X. So now you're able to do it. Great. But how many times before Eric does X does it no longer become great because it's just what we expect? So that when players are now making mistakes, it's, oh, well, Eric, that weren't good enough.
Which is to my next point, another additional area is that I feel, in coaching school, right, within the licenses, is that psychosocial aspect, right? You mentioned earlier about the use of guided questions, right? There's an art to asking the right guided question, right? Because if we go too broad, then there is no context given, right? And we could come up with just catchphrase buzzwords of space, time, and all of this, versus if, it comes to it becomes a closed question,
But
right?
you see, but I think again, we'll go full circle, right? Because those questions could only be formulated. In fact, let me rephrase that. Those questions are easier to formulate if you know you have an answer to the problem. But I think we have to be very careful that we don't let our answer bias the way in which you articulate the question to lead them to that, rather than you knowing you have an answer that could work and understanding the rationale behind it, and just asking that question from a perception of what are the variables that we consider. So a phrase that I came up with recently was, when we were observing the game, are we observing through our eyes or their experiences?
Our eyes, 100%, right? But like
But it should be their
usually a
experiences,
normal
right?
coach, it should be their experiences, 100%. And that's the tough part, is every player is different, right? So it's not just one way that we can coach, right? So we need to have a certain cap on, which is just like almost a chameleon, right? Of, look, I need control of this session, but now whenever I'm giving player A feedback or information, right? It needs to be done in this way based on his preferences or her preferences, and the fact that they're this level or that level and they've been able to do you know what I mean? So it like it's very I'm interested to see a, again, don't want to call it a model because it's not, it's more, you know, a, you know, methodology of kind of how you're going to approach coaching, right? But coaches need these tools, you know what I mean? They need to, first of all, I think first step is awareness with everything else, right? Is awareness that these aspects exist, first of all. And then it's the question mark of, okay, you know, can I develop an action plan? You're not going to get better at everything straight away, right? But as you're saying, right, it, you know, you need a
It's, again, it goes back to what you said earlier, right? The more you begin to know, the more you realize what you didn't know. So what I thought was okay back then, I realized actually it's not that great now. So yeah, I think it is definitely about self-awareness. I think from a coaching standpoint, as well as a player development standpoint. So, but nah, it's good, man.
that's
Eric, I'm
incredible.
conscious of time as well, man. I know that we've been on this call,
Yes,
but we're
yes.
probably going down a few more rabbit holes before we get over and done with. But
For
I just
sure.
want to say a massive thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it, man.
Appreciate it too, man. Yes, this has been great, man. I've really enjoyed it. I've been a fan from far, man. I've obviously listened to the podcast a lot. You're obviously doing great things, man. Always poking holes and going a little bit deeper, man, which needs to be done, man. It needs to be done, right? If we're going to be elite at anything and we're going to you know, take the game in the right direction, you know, it needs to go down those rabbit holes. So love it, man. Love your stuff. Keep doing what you're doing, man.
100%. I really appreciate it, Eric, man. Let's touch base soon as well.
Wicked. Thanks, man.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.